Welcome to Smart Talk and good morning. I'm Brian Roach, sitting in for the vacationing Scott Lamar. As the consumer investigator at WGAL News 8, I can tell you there is no one single subject that generates more viewer calls, emails, messages, and complaints than the subject of robocalls. They're annoying, they're intrusive, they're repetitive, they're unwanted. And the problem is getting worse every single month. According to the UMail Robocall Index, more than 4.1 billion robocalls were placed during the month of June alone. That's nearly 13 calls per person per month. In less than 1 year, the amount of robocalls in the country has nearly doubled. So who's making all these calls? How are these calls being made? What's the technology behind them? How do the callers make fake phone numbers appear on your caller ID? Numbers that look like your neighbor may be calling you. We've all heard of the Do Not Call list. Is it even worth putting your number on that list anymore? And what are lawmakers and phone companies doing to stop these calls? Today on Smart Talk, you're going to learn all you need to know about robocalls. We're joined by attorney Margo Saunders of the National Consumer Law Center. She's testified before a U.S. Senate committee on abusive robocalls. Also joining us today is John Banks, Senior Vice President of U.S. Telecom. Also today on Smart Talk, we're going to have a conversation about customer service. Another common discussion I have with consumers is about the way businesses treat their customers. Poor service, bad attitudes displayed by employees, verbal promises made by owners, you name it. Being rude is not illegal, but it can cause significant damage to a business. On the other side of the coin, customers who demand too much when it comes to customer service. So today I'll speak with Duffy Johnson from the Etiquette School of Central Pennsylvania. One of the programs they offer is customer service training for businesses. We'll find out how businesses are learning to treat their customers better. So it's all about the consumer today on Smart Talk, and we invite you to be part of today's discussion as well. You can call us at 1-800-729-7532 or email smarttalk@witf.org. Once again, I want to welcome my guest this morning, Attorney Margo Saunders of the National Consumer Law Center. Good morning, Attorney Saunders. Are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
And John Banks, the Senior Vice President with U.S. Telecom. Good morning, Mr. Banks.
I'm here, and thanks for the opportunity, Brian.
Big topic, subject that I talk about with people every single day, numerous times a day. So let me start with this question. Why is this nearing epidemic proportions? As I just said, 4.1 billion calls placed last month. Why does this number continue to go up? It's not going down. Attorney Saunders, let me start with you. How would you answer that question?
Well, we think there's several reasons. I would say three reasons. One is callers obviously are finding them worthwhile to keep making them because they keep making them. The cost of the calls keep going down, and the returns must be worth it for the callers. Two, because so many calls are being made, people are answering the phone less frequently. Thus, it must be, or it's likely to be, that callers find they have to call the same number multiple times in order to get an answer. Three, we think that some of these calls are being made as a result of the question that is currently pending before the Federal Communications Commission about how to define which calls are covered by a federal law that would otherwise limit the call.
And that's something that we're going to address today. Mr. Banks, what would be your answer to that question? Why do these calls continue to multiply every month?
I agree really with what Margo said. It's unfortunately and sadly somehow these illegal calls are still somehow profitable for scammers to make. I guess the only thing I would add to her list is that, and she mentioned that the cost of making these calls goes down. There's a lot of kind of shady internet technology involved that's very available on the open market for people like these scammers to buy that lets them make up the phone numbers, the spoofing you were referring to, and lets them kind of route calls from all over the world into the U.S. phone network. So some of the technology improvements that have helped us in our daily lives have also led to more robocalls.
Let's drill down on that a little bit, because the consumers I speak to every day, the vast majority of them believe that there is some one person out there or a group of people who are sitting there dialing a telephone and singling them out to target them with these calls. True or false, John?
I think that's pretty much false. In terms of the illegal robocalls, they're almost all computer-generated, where people go through often random lists of phone numbers. The problem, one problem with answering these robocalls is that then the scammers know that that's a real number with a real person behind it. They might put that on a special list and either sell that to other robocalls or call it more often.
I've heard that story many, many times. That is absolutely true, but people have a tough time believing that. So I have heard it often referred to as the suckers list because, again, as you said, you answer the phone, they know it's a live number, they're going to call you back. Is that the major part of the problem, why people continue to get these phone calls?
So may I answer that?
Sure, yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Margo.
So I think we have somewhat of a difference of opinion about who is making these calls. One problem that the whole community involved in dealing with robocalls has is we really don't have data that we can all unite behind as being reliable. So we're reduced to relying on the data that is available. And according to the data that you referred to a few minutes ago, that's provided by one of the largest robocall blocker services, Umail, the highest number of robocalls that are actually made are not scammers. They're actually calls by legitimate businesses collecting debts. And that's been the experience of the lawyers with whom I work as well. Telemarketers do call, scammers do call, but the majority of the robocalls that many people are getting are from people collecting debts, either from them or from someone else, and the robocallers won't stop calling even when the called person says you've got the wrong party.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. We're talking right now with Attorney Margo Saunders of the National Consumer Law Center and John Banks, the Senior Vice President with U.S. Telecom. And Margo, to go back to the point you were just making, you are correct. According to the Umail Robocall Index, and a lot of people think these robocalls are all scams, but according to the Umail Robocall Index, 27% of the robocalls are scam. 25% are telemarketing, 24% are payment reminders, and 24% are alerts and reminders. So to elaborate on that a little bit, John, sometimes these robocalls do serve a purpose in the sense of maybe reminding people of doctor's appointments or school functions, et cetera?
I think that's a really good point and really worth stepping back to say that a lot of automatic calls are helpful. I mean, either from your school or your doctor or pharmacy that, you know, gives you information about your student or your prescriptions. And that, of course, is part of the challenge for telephone carriers to screen out only the bad robocalls, and nobody wants to block or screen out, you know, a call from your pharmacy or a call from your school. So that is part of the technological challenge we have of figuring out how best to block the bad calls but not block the good calls.
And that is the big challenge.
And indeed, a lot of consumers do want these alerts and reminders, and we are not taking the position by any means that those should be stopped. The law that I'm referring to simply requires that consent be provided before the automated call is sent to a cell phone, which means that once the consumer says stop calling, the consent is revoked and the call should stop. The problems that we hear about are often from alerts or reminders or debt collectors who are calling people that are different than the people who gave the consent. For example, in a recent case that came out of, I think it was Pennsylvania, a cell phone user had obtained a new phone, and that phone had the phone number of a previous Yahoo Mail recipient. And the previous recipient had signed up for an alert service that Yahoo would send him a text every time he got an email. And when the new user kept getting all these texts, he contacted Yahoo and said, please stop. Mm-hmm. Yahoo said they had no way of stopping, and they wouldn't stop. 27,000 texts later, the consumer filed suit, and then finally the text stopped. But because of this issue over how to define the technology that initiated those texts, the court just held that they weren't even covered by the law, and that consumer who had begged for them to stop had no redress.
Margo,
I
can imagine
this is a big problem.
I can imagine any business would have that argument. How, and they would respond by saying, how practical is it for me to get consent from all the customers that I deal with? But in this case you just described, this individual had to resort to a lawsuit to solve the problem.
Well, regardless of how practical it is for the business to get consent, the federal law requires that consent. But consent can be easily obtained. It's considered consent to receive a phone call if you give your phone number to the caller. So if I sign up for a credit card and I give my phone number in the process of applying for that credit card, that's considered consent to call me about the credit card or about the debt that I haven't paid in relation to the credit card.
Now, speaking of lawsuits in relation to all this, we have a caller on the line, Dave from Union Township. Dave, you're saying that you have sued a telemarketer, is that correct?
That's correct, I did, and not many people are aware, but every individual has the right under the 1996 Federal Telecommunications Act to sue a telemarketer if they're on the do not call list and they've asked not to be called. Every individual is entitled $500 per call. If the call meets certain standards, they're entitled to three times that per call, so up to $1,500 per call. I've used that in court, just in your local small claims court, and I've won.
You have won?
Yes, I have.
What did that feel like? Was that a major victory for you, for all consumers out there?
You know, frankly, what I really wanted was this company to stop calling me. And they did eventually stop calling me after I won the lawsuit because it was harassing me. But I did also win money, and it felt great to beat. They had a Harvard lawyer. It was me against a Harvard lawyer, and I won.
Well, Dave, congratulations. Margo, when you hear a story like that, what's your reaction?
That's great. That's exactly the point of this law. It's to empower consumers to protect themselves. And it's hoped that the threat of monetary damages will provide sufficient incentive to the callers to be careful about the calls they make. This is why we are so afraid that the Federal Communications Commission may issue an opinion not covering many of the calls and texts that are bothering people, because that will remove that very law and that very tool that your caller used to protect himself.
We'll take a short break here right now. I want to remind you, you're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Brian Roach. And welcome back to Smart Talk. I'm Brian Roach from WGAL News 8, sitting in for the vacationing Scott Lamar. And today we're talking about one of the most persistent, annoying subjects that I talk about with consumers, robocalls. I'm speaking today with Attorney Margo Saunders of the National Consumer Law Center and John Banks, the Senior Vice President of Communication and Public Affairs with U.S. Telecom. John, let me ask you, the technology to deal with these things, what is in place to stop or slow down or eliminate, that might be a pipe dream, these robocalls?
So there are a few things that consumers need to think about here. One is that there are a lot of apps and services that will help you block calls. Like you said, Brian, none of these are fail-safe. But on the U.S. Telecom website, for example, we list most of the currently available services and applications that you could put on your cell phone or use at home to screen calls or block calls or only let some calls through. In addition, companies, the telephone companies that, you know, these calls go across our networks, and we don't really like delivering offensive calls to our consumers. So we've been stepping up our own efforts to try to block calls, and the FCC has been very helpful with loosening up some regulations to let us do more of that. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is somehow to make these scams less profitable for the people that are doing them, you know, without squelching the legitimate calls. And some of that means just not picking up the phone and engaging with them, or some of it means trying to, you know, for consumers or others to take action against the firms that are making these calls. We do a lot of work with the Federal Communications Commission, the Federal Trade Commission, and state attorneys general to help them figure out, you know, when there are spoofed numbers or made-up numbers. We try to help them trace those numbers back to where they really came from, which sometimes is difficult and sometimes takes you to far-off countries.
Margot, do you think the FCC is doing enough?
Well, I think there's a lot more that the FCC can do. It is considering doing some significant, initiating some significant proceedings and considerations, which I think are good. The question is what happens, you know, whether or not they actually will follow through. We hope they will. This commission has said repeatedly that robocalls are their number one complaint and that they are committed to doing something about them. The spoofing and scams is one problem, and stopping unwanted robocalls from known callers is a separate but related problem. The spoofing issue requires the implementation of a new technology that John can probably talk about better than I. And that requires the telephone companies to be able to authenticate the callers and the calls to make sure that the calls actually come from the number that they purport to come from, and thus block the calls that are not authentic. We think that if this technology were in place, and that the result would be the consumers would be protected much better, because you, rather than getting these phone numbers that look like your name, these phone calls that look like they're coming from your neighbor, you'd know who they were. That's the tension right now, is how long it will take to develop that technology, when it will be developed, and who will be required to use it, and so on.
I often tell consumers, quite frankly, the callers have got much better technology at their fingertips than we do to stop the calls. And one piece of technology that I'm familiar with, and it seems a lot of people are familiar with, is NoMo Robo. This was an item that became the focus of an FTC contest several years ago. The gentleman who invented this won the contest. I think he won a $25,000 prize for it. And a lot of people are familiar with NoMo Robo. And John, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but going back to what Margo was just saying, can you give us a short explanation of how something like NoMo Robo would work to block calls?
So NoMo Robo is a great service. It's an independent service that, you're right, Aaron Foss, who started it, won a prize at the FTC, which was trying to get more people thinking about ways to empower consumers to block calls. In the big picture, NoMo Robo is what we would call a blacklist. And so back at their headquarters, they try to track numbers that seem to be making lots of improper robocalls. They put those numbers on a list, and then when those numbers call you, if you're using their service, they block those numbers or they'll send them to your voicemail, but they won't let them go through.
You do have to have, my understanding is you have to have internet-based telephone service to use that, though?
You do.
Yeah, that's the big drawback there. We have a caller on the line, Catherine from Kelowna. Catherine, you have a thought on who these callers are actually targeting?
Yes, I do. My mother is 91 years old, and she is often awakened at 6 in the morning with calls from either robos or from not robos, actual people calling her. And I think this is a target against elderly people.
Thank you, Catherine. Margo, what would you say in response to that? I often have that conversation with people as well. I think it's just because the elderly spend more time at home and they're there to answer the telephone. Is there any suggestion that these calls are actually targeting the elderly specifically?
Well, I think that it has been widely agreed that elderly are targets of scammers. I don't think there's any dispute about that. But I think that younger people are also getting harassed with robocalls. My son and several of his friends who are college and graduate school age are currently being harassed by some insurance, health insurance cells that they are just tearing their hair out because they get 10 calls a day and they don't know how to stop the calls. We're working with various technologies to try to deal with that. But my point is, and I'm not sure those calls are actually scams, but we're not sure they're not. So I think the problem is very much an issue for the elderly, but it's not just for the elderly.
On the technology note, I want to circle back to a subject that we kind of glanced off earlier in the program, the subject of automated dialers. And John, I'm going to turn to you for that again. How would you describe an automated dialer to the person who's just, you know, sitting at home answering their phone like every other normal human being? But what does an auto dialer do?
Well, just think of somebody in a call center, legitimate or not legitimate, sitting in front of a computer with a headset on. They just click a button on the computer, and the computer dials a number or dials 10 numbers. And when somebody picks up on one of the numbers, it connects that call to the person sitting there with a headset. So a person isn't punching the numbers in, you know, phone by phone.
And then the most disturbing aspect of that now is, Margo, the neighbor spoofing, how they can spoof a telephone number, making it look like someone from down the street is calling you just to pick up the phone.
Well, legitimate callers and illegitimate callers do caller spoofing. I think you'll find from that a number of debt collectors and a number of banks and a number of consumer sellers routinely spoof their numbers. In other words, they don't show on the caller ID who they are to enhance the effectiveness of people kidding, to enhance the chances that the called party will answer the phone. That's not technically illegal unless the purpose of the spoofing is to defraud someone. And there are two bills in Congress, one in the Senate and one in the House, that would make all call spoofing illegal unless it's for the purpose of protecting the identity of the caller.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. We're talking with Attorney Margo Saunders of the National Consumer Law Center and John Banks, the Senior Vice President of U.S. Telecom. A reminder that we welcome your questions and comments. You can call us at 1-800-729-7532 or send us an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or comment on witf.org or on WITF's Facebook page. Again, the phone number is 1-800-729-7532. In front of me right now is an email, and Sue emails this in. And Margo, I guess this question would be for you. Are calls that come in soliciting money for an organization that I'm likely to give money to, such as an environmental or political group, and who have a passionate person on the other end soliciting donations, is that a robocall?
That's a very good question. So first of all, a call that is not selling something and is made to your residential phone is not covered by any law. It's not covered by the do not call list, and it's not covered by the otherwise covered by the Telephone Consumer Protection Act if it's made to a landline phone. If that same call comes to your cell phone and the caller is soliciting money for a nonprofit and has dialed your number, there is no law limiting or prohibiting that call. If the call comes to your cell phone and that caller has used what John described as an auto dialer, even with a human on the end, that call is perfectly legal so long as there is some history of your having consented to that call. So if, for example, you signed up 5 years ago for a newsletter, or you gave money to that organization several years ago and gave your cell phone number, those would be considered consents for that caller to call you on your cell phone.
Okay. John, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to tell you right up front. I may sound like I'm putting you on the defensive, but I hear from a number of people who say the phone companies are never going to do anything to stop this, because if they stop phone calls, they stop, or they're going to stop revenue from flowing into their coffers. How would you respond to that? I hear that at a disturbing rate. What would you say to people when, if they were to say that to you?
Well, I think that when you're using telephone companies like that, it's an awfully broad term. So let me say that the companies that you sign up with, you know, for your telephone service, they don't make money off these calls. And in fact, companies that have historically made money by providing landline service have seen landline phone subscribership plummet in part because of all the annoying robocalls. So sort of your local phone company is not making money off this and not happy to have the cost of delivering all these calls and not happy to be offending their subscribers. There are, however, other telephone companies that I think none of your listeners would know the name of that are further back up in the chain of telephone companies. And some of those companies take these robocalls. And Margo is right to keep saying some of them are legitimate and some not. But some of the companies way up the chain take some illegal robocalls and make money off them and then dump them onto the local phone networks, where our companies are not happy about that.
You bring up a good point, because I've talked to consumers too who say, you know, I'm done with my phone. I just put it on silent. I'll go to it once in a while, check if there's any messages. I don't use it as a phone per se anymore. I use it as more of an email and voicemail machine, and I'm not using the phone. So there is a detriment to the phone companies and a reason for them to try to address this problem. We have a caller on the line. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Margo.
Let me just point out that the dynamic of what's happened to residential phones and the drop-off of residential phones is because of the robocallers to residential phones. And if the FCC does what we are so afraid that it will do, that same thing will happen to cell phones. We are diminishing the value of our phones. And one of the reasons that we are pushing the FCC to hold the line is to maintain the value of the phone as a communication device. Sorry, go ahead.
That's fine. We have a caller on the line, Dave. Dave, you're saying you're getting robocalls from insurance companies and security companies, and if I understand what's written here, you toy with these companies?
Yes. What happens is it'll be my area code, so I think it's the neighbor, like she mentioned. And then I say, oh, they got me. So I decide to get them back. They say, are you the homeowner? I say, no, I rent. And then an automatic hang-up. With the insurance, they say, are you able to get this insurance? And I say, well, do you give insurance to 11-year-olds? And they hang up the phone. That has stopped my calls from coming in, with me giving them grief that they can't handle.
All right, Dave, thank you very much. John, what's your response to that? I'm going back to what you mentioned a few minutes ago. Even answering the telephone is not a good idea, correct?
Well, I hate to say that answering the phone is a bad idea, because you know, there are still, I think, some calls people want to get. But Dave's strategy is interesting, and there are you know, internet videos of people toying with their robocallers and trying to keep them on the phone for 45 minutes to sort of drive up their costs and make the calling unprofitable. I think it's really not a strategy that people in the industry recommend, because it can end up with, as we mentioned before, companies realizing that this is a good number with a live person and selling, you know, lists of those numbers to other robocallers, so it can kind of backfire and get you more calls. But I have a lot of sympathy for what your caller was saying.
Yeah, I'm reminding of my father here, who would always say, don't poke a skunk with a stick. And and that's what I tell people. You should not do this, and you're only going to invite your more calls for yourself. So, listen, we're running short on time here. I've got about 2 minutes left. So I want to wrap up by asking both of you, what is your best advice for consumers to deal with these robocalls right now? What would you say is the best thing they can do, or the best app they can have, or the best practice that they can incorporate to slow down or try to eliminate these robocalls? Margo?
Well, I would say I'm not sure what they can do at this moment. I would encourage them to communicate with the Federal Communications Commission and tell them to hold the line and on the law.
John?
I think people should look, just search for call blocking apps and services, or look at your local phone company website, because they usually have a call about services to block robocalls. I would take that sort of action. And Margo was very accurate about this sort of new technology telephone companies are working on. And the FCC has been pushing very hard, pushing us hard to do this. And people will start implementing that in 2019. It will take a while to get it implemented across the country, but hopefully that will help. But I don't think there's any way to just totally eliminate the scourge of illegal robocalls.
But we can keep trying.
Yes.
I want to thank my guests today for joining us, John Banks, the Senior Vice President of Communication and Public Affairs with U.S. Telecom, and Attorney Margo Saunders with the National Consumer Law Center. She is the Senior Counsel there. Thank you to both of my guests, and thank you for tuning in today. Right now, I want to remind you, you're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. Stay with us. We'll be right back with a conversation about customer service. Welcome back to Smart Talk. I'm Brian Roach from WGAL News 8, sitting in for the vacationing Scott Lamar. You can call us at 1-800-729-7532 or send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can also leave a question or comment on witf.org or on WITF's Facebook page. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. That's the phone number to call if you have questions or comments about customer service. And with that in mind, I'm going to welcome to the program Duffy Johnson from the Etiquette School of Central Pennsylvania. I have to tell you, Duffy, I didn't know there was an etiquette school in Central Pennsylvania. In 20 seconds, what do you guys do?
We teach kids and families, and we teach to schools and churches, colleges, universities, all sorts of businesses. We help young professionals entering careers as well as top executives learn the skills required for successful business interactions.
So you guys do what my mother always taught me, just to observe my manners.
Right, right.
Well, one of the things that you do that caught my attention here is you do have, would you call it a class or a program for teaching corporations customer service, better customer service? So if I'm starting a new business, what would you be telling me about? What would you be teaching me?
Well, a business wants to think about what they provide from the customer's point of view, the customer-centric focus. They want to do everything in their business, design their product to delivering the product and interacting with customers from the customer's point of view. What would be the most positive experience for the customer?
And where do companies fail? I'm sure you have to have some stories of companies failing to do the right thing in regard to what you're just talking about. Where's the biggest point where they drop the ball in that relationship?
Well, maybe failing to do what they promise. If you make a promise, you must follow through. That builds reliability and trust in the customer.
And so the question I asked in our opening segment is, what's more important to you, a good price on a product or good service? What do you think most consumers choose?
Well, I think that it's proven over and over that it is not just price, but customer service. If you think of any type of business, the customer has choices. Maybe a bagel shop, there might be 10 in your town and all have similar prices. How do you choose which business you'll give your business to? I think it's customer service that brings customers back. Getting the order right, providing prompt service, using the customer's name over time and providing it with a smile. It's customer service that distinguishes one company from another, not just price.
I am a big advocate in I'll pay extra for better service. I always tell people you get what you pay for. Do most consumers, though, look at the price first?
Well, the price matters, absolutely. But again, there are many companies that provide similar products for similar prices, and it's customer service that will distinguish one company over another. And I also think that it's not just price. It's the service that is provided that matters and keeps customers coming back. And perhaps a good price will get a customer in the door, but if they have a bad experience, they won't return.
What is good customer service? Is it a smile? Is it a handshake? Is it showing you genuinely care? Elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, all of those matter. It's having a smile and a positive attitude. It's letting the customer know that you're happy they're there. They have choices. They can go somewhere else. And it is listening to the customer, listening to what they want, and listening to feedback. A lot of customer service is going to involve complaints and problems, and we really want companies to think about that in a new way too, that complaints are an opportunity for you to learn how to improve your business, how to make it better from the customer's point of view, and so it's an opportunity.
What happens to the company that doesn't embrace that opportunity? That's a really elementary question.
Yeah, I think that one bad experience is going to end that customer's business with you. They won't return, and they can tell their friends, they can tell their family, they can go on social media. So you really want to strive to make each customer happy on every visit.
I get a lot of complaints from viewers in my line of work as the consumer investigator WGAL, and I'll have people call me and talk about how they were treated poorly at a business, and they want me to investigate and do a story on them. And I think I shared with you my line the other day on the phone. What I tell people, being rude is not a crime, but it leaves an everlasting scar on that business, doesn't it?
It does. Absolutely. That's right. It's not illegal, and there's not really any recourse other than not spending your money with that business again. And of course, that customer can tell anybody that they want to, and so the reputation spreads. So it is important to strive for a positive customer experience in mm-hmm. every single interaction.
I've been around long enough to remember the mom and pop businesses of many years ago. And I love to think of those days when my father used to take me to the bakery and the tire shop and everything, and he knew everybody. But is customer service changing? And I don't want to know how long you've been around. Is customer service changing from those days where you used to have these mom and pop operations? Because now, so often, we are served by large corporations. There's no mom and pop there. It's blah, 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 Inc. And Limited. Is that changing with the corporate culture now? Or are they striving harder to maintain customer service?
Well, I think a smart company is striving harder to maintain that personal contact and good customer service. And corporations are really just people. There's technology involved, but people want to deal with real live people, especially phone calls, going back to your discussions this morning. People want to talk to a real live person, and that personal interaction is still very important and always will be.
I hate voicemail when you call someplace and you get 45 prompts to get through to someone. When I actually get a live person on the phone, I'm shocked. And I've even said to people, you're a live person. You're actually there, aren't you? That goes a long, long way, doesn't it?
It really does. I don't know anybody who really likes those automatic phone calls and messages and choices, and especially when it's very difficult or impossible to get to a live person. Some people want to talk to a real live person, somebody who it tells you that they do care about what you have to say and what your needs are, and somebody that has the ability to solve your problem or to fulfill your needs. It really is just incredibly important, and I think that companies are probably going back to that. We've all embraced technology so much, but we still want to have the personal interaction, and I think it pays off with a positive customer experience and return business.
As a business owner, I could appreciate why someone would want to have a voicemail system to save time and allow them to do other things. But again, are they trading off aggravating a customer like me by not picking up the phone and saying, hello, what can I do for you?
Yes, I really think so, Brian. And also along those lines, putting customers on hold. There are those maybe call centers or customer service representatives that are handling many, many calls. And before they even make a hello or how are you or you get to speak, hold, please. So it is maddening. We want to talk to a real live person and know that our business matters.
Yeah. And you know, with the phones that we have nowadays, the timer's on there on the phone telling you how long. So I love nothing better than being put on hold and watching the seconds tick by and my minutes go on my cell phone. So a business approaches you and they want you to help them with their customer service. Do you guys go in and watch what they do? Do you do, maybe this is a bad word, but an autopsy of sorts on how they're conducting their customer service?
Well, that's an interesting thought.
autopsy is a bad word. Do you do an analysis?
There's
a better word, analysis.
Well, we do want information about their business and what they do and how we can help them, of course. So, yes, learning about what they do is important. And then the first part is just teaching a customer-centric approach. And we all kind of get involved in our daily routines, and we look for ways to make our days and our jobs easier. But going the extra mile for the customer is really what we want to help them find ways to do that, not just to satisfy the customers, but to really have a proactive approach to exceeding customer expectations.
So you help companies, but I'm looking for advice for me as a consumer. If I have a bad situation with a company, how would I, as a customer, try to encourage or ask for better customer service?
Well, communication. You want to speak to your first line of contact, and if you're not satisfied, don't give up. Keep persevere to find the right person to talk to, because a business that cares about their customers will want to know about your experience and your feedback. And that is something that we teach, that it should not be taken personally. It should be taken as an opportunity. It's really a good thing that your customer is bringing information to you about their experience, because we don't always understand the other side of the equation. And so as a customer, you want to have realistic expectations, and you want to try to be as patient and polite about it as you can, because everybody makes mistakes and companies are really just made up of people, but give them an opportunity to solve the problem, whether that is replacing the product or redoing a service or somehow giving you something extra. Maybe it's a discount or a future, coupon or something towards another opportunity to get it right.
There's consumers on both sides of the coin here. I know some friends of mine, even some family members, who when they go into a business and they're treated badly, they just walk out, or they say nothing and they come home and they vent.
Yes.
And then on the other side of the coin, you have people who they can go a little off the edge in the store. You've got to find a happy medium there. But again, your point is the business should appreciate that feedback.
Absolutely. The worst thing for the business is the first that you describe, the person who leaves and is never coming back. And also they, again, can tell everybody that they know, and especially with social media, that news spreads far and wide very quickly. And so that customer who is staying there and persevering to tell you their problem or experience, their complaint, that is something to be appreciated and an opportunity. And companies need to embrace that. They should want the communication and the feedback and listen to it and act on it. Improve your business from the customer's point of view.
So the scenario we're describing here, the customer who walks out doesn't say anything, is probably going to be more detrimental to that business in the long run, because they're going to go out and tell all their friends about the bad service they had.
That's exactly right, Brian.
Now, I know a number of business owners, restaurant owners, and so on and so forth, and I have picked up the phone and called them directly after I've had a bad experience, and the vast majority of them will thank me. Then they ask me, is this going to be a story on TV? And I'm, no, but I'm trying to help you, and most of them will say, thank you very much, we'll learn from that, and we'll move on. We have a caller who, I'm sorry, it's not a caller, they sent in a note here yesterday. A person was in a grocery store, a checkout guy had to do a price check, and the guy strolled back to get it. It took 3 minutes, and when he came back, I said, could you have taken any longer? His response was, sorry, I was in my own head. So let's dissect this, Duffy. The customer was he assertive, or would you say he was rude? Was he standing up for his own time? And what was what would you think was the response from the checkout guy? Sorry, I was in my own head. I guess there's fault on both sides of this story, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. And it certainly requires patience on both sides. But the checkout clerk should understand that the customer's time is important, and prompt service in any business is a top expectation. And really, they should, especially when there's a problem, they should do their best to resolve it quickly. And if that means getting the price that was not already on that item, do it quickly. So I think that the customer does have a right to speak up, but some patience and courtesy is expected too.
When you and I spoke on the phone the other day, we talked about point of contact, and that's those few minutes or sometimes literally seconds that the customer is dealing with the business. Now, you may have an employee who's there working 8-9 hours, they're tired and aggravated, but those few seconds or minutes with that customer can make or break the whole experience, correct?
That is right. Right. Now, this clerk might be representing a company of maybe hundreds and thousands of people, but he is the frontline interaction for the customer. He is maybe the only person that customer will ever contact in the company. And so his or her behavior is incredibly important to the company, and companies would do well to understand that and to train and work with frontline people to make the best positive customer experience.
We have about 2 minutes left. I want to share one final observation that I have. I love to support brick and mortar stores. I think it's very important for our community. But I also find that I get pretty good customer service when I go online. I recently had an issue with a clothing company. I sent something back. It was actually my fault. The order was messed up because of my order, but they sent it back, and boom, I got a new product, the right size, right away. So when you get customer service like that, I remember that experience, and that is something, I guess, that brick-and-mortar businesses need to keep in mind. They have that face-to-face opportunity to make an impression.
That's right. It's powerful, and all businesses should use it to their advantage. Whether it's in person or online, you can use it to make a dramatic impact on the customer. And if you have a very positive experience like you described, Brian, you won't forget that and you'll return.
Any final thoughts for customers on how to get better customer service? You made a pretty good point earlier, just being polite but assertive.
True, and have realistic expectations, and you always get you'll get better results with a positive attitude.
And a smile.
And a smile.
All right, thank you very much. Duffy Johnson, thank you for joining us today. I want to thank you, and I want to thank our other guest today, Attorney Margo Saunders of the National Consumer Law Center, and John Banks, who joined us from U.S. Telecom Company, and Duffy Johnson from the Etiquette School of Central Pennsylvania. I'm going to watch my manners from now on and make sure I know where to check it. You can hear today's show and previous editions of Smart Talk on WITF.org/podcast or with the WITF app. You can also hear the entire program tonight at 7. I'm Brian Roach. Thank you for being with us here on WITF's Smart Talk.